This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a five-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-Hour Energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
Survivor 48 is here. And after every episode, dig deep into the show with On Fire, the official Survivor podcast. Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast with me, Jeff Probst, every Wednesday after the show, wherever you get your podcasts.
It's hour two of the G-Bag Nation here on 105.3 The Fan. Hope you're having a great day. C-Notes coming up at 3:20. We'll recap everything of relevance that's happened for your football team over the weekend and look forward to the rest of this week. It's time now for Zach Wolchuk's NFL News Today. Zach out today, did a heck of a job with KNC Masterpiece filling in for Majors. So here's the chief with his broadcast responsibilities, Eric.
Yes, thank you very much. Okay, now some weekend house cleaning in the NFL. You did have the Niners end up re-signing their stud fullback, Kyle Juszczyk, 2 years, $8 million. So they cut him. He flirts with the Steelers, and then he comes back on a two-year deal. They also trade running back Jordan Mason to the Vikings. And Jordan Mason was a solid bright spot for them once Christian McCaffrey got banged up last year. But now they send him to Minnesota, and they keep Kyle Juszczyk. Now, we also had the Bengals very active this weekend. We had the reports on Friday that the Bengals were really trying to get this stuff done with their receivers. They end up doing just that. It's Ja'Marr Chase, 4 years, $161 million, $112 million guaranteed. So he gets over $40 million per year, which is considerably more than what Justin Jefferson got resetting the wide receiver market just last year. So thank God the Cowboys got CeeDee Lamb done, at least when they did, because the numbers are continuing to skyrocket for receivers. And then T. Higgins, wide receiver two in Cincinnati, 4 years, $115 million. And the first 2 years of that deal are guaranteed. So they're spending quite a bit of money on their two receivers. Hopefully Higgins can stay healthy, because there's no question as the two in the 1-2 punch, T. Higgins is a super stud when he's healthy. Him and Chase together are really a cheat code if they could only get the offensive line correct. And we'll get to that team building strategy here in a second. But the Bengals also working to retain Trey Hendrickson, the NFL's sack leader from this past season. Discussions are ongoing between the two sides. So maybe all hope is not lost for the Bengals to retain not only Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins, but also one of the best pass rushers in all of football in Trey Hendrickson. That
so
should be a no-brainer.
Negotiating maybe from the Bengals, acting like they didn't want to do all three of them. I just don't feel like if you have players that are that good at the top of their position or close to it, you can let them go.
Yeah, I mean, Diana Russini was saying like plenty of teams are interested in trading for Trey Hendrickson, but they don't want to meet the asking price that the Bengals had put out there. Probably at least a first-round pick and more, maybe two first-round picks, whatever it is. The Bengals were asking too much, and maybe the Bengals now are like, well, if we're not going to get that, we might as well just keep the player. Or maybe they didn't give up as much money as they thought they were going to like T. Higgins, and so they feel like they have enough room now to make it work with Trey Hendrickson. But keeping Hendrickson should be a huge priority for them. That should have been the priority probably over T. Higgins, unless, of course, it was Joe Burrow that was demanding, like, I'd rather still have T. Higgins than have Trey Hendrickson. You're trying to please him.
I mean, when it comes to their team, you got to look at the defense. Like, this was the reason we were so bad and couldn't win enough to take advantage of the hot football that we played late in the season. I just don't know how you can imagine yourself going to get better, because, you know, with a quarterback like that, you don't really even need an offensive line. Get him a couple of wide receivers, he's going to ring you up 30 points, you know? Get a defense.
Yeah, it's interesting that you say that, because I saw Brett Coleman just make the observation, Cincinnati, third in QB spending, first in wide receiver spending by a lot now with Chase and Higgins, but they're 28th in O-line spending.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you can do that. That's what Burrow just proved, didn't he?
I think to some extent you're right. Now, being able to actually win the Super Bowl with a line like that might be more difficult, but clearly just with a middle-of-the-road defense last year, that would have been a playoff team.
Yeah.
So that is probably first and foremost what you need to do if you're Cincinnati. That defense was just disgusting last year. So if they keep Trey Hendrickson, again, this is great news, because Myles Garrett now, not an Eagle, not a Commander, not a Lion. He stays with the Browns. If Hendrickson stays with the Bengals, and we can kind of have a sigh of relief of, okay, the Eagles aren't going to swoop in and go get this guy. The Commanders aren't going to swoop in and go get this guy. So as a Cowboys fan, I am hoping that Hendrickson ends up just staying with the Bengals.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Cowboys might have gotten marginally better if the rest of the division could get a little bit worse. You know, maybe you can bridge that gap if you have a great draft.
Cowboys also signed former Eagles wide receiver Paris Campbell over the weekend. Mm-hmm. I'm sure we'll maybe kick that around a little bit more in a Cowboys conversation, but yeah, I don't know. The production's not really there over the last couple of years.
It's
hilarious. You have all these big name receivers on the market, and you're like, oh, the Cowboys are getting a receiver? Let's see. Oh, it's Paris Campbell, who I guess now can say he's a champion.
He can.
You get that pedigree in the locker room. You never know what that can do for an organization.
He's also become a 1,000-yard receiver. That's for his career.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. I was like, wow, okay. So in like six seasons, he has one season's worth of stats.
Yeah.
So that's wonderful. I don't think he's made a difference for a team since at least 2022. But he's a Cowboy now, and that's extremely exciting. Okay, Najee Harris is now with the Los Angeles Chargers. 1 year is like $9.5 million, whatever. And so he obviously comes from Pittsburgh, which is the only place that he's been in the NFL. He went from Alabama to Pittsburgh, and now he's a Charger. He met with the media for the first time as a Charger, and you can just hear how he's trying not to take digs at Pittsburgh, but like the new facilities. You go from one of the oldest franchises in football to now the LA Chargers that have the works when it comes to resources and facilities and stuff, and you can just hear how excited he is.
It's a great weight room, first of all. You know, even the facility is all great things, man. This is a lot of things that they provide here, man, that, you know, you take advantage of. And I was just telling them, I was like, man, it's not like this everywhere, man. Like, you know, this is a special thing right here. Remind me of college at Alabama, you know, all the resources that they have. So, you know, just getting the chance to take advantage of all this opportunity is a blessing. And I was telling him that. I'm like, man, y'all have a great thing going on right now. You know, because it's not like this everywhere. It's not. So, man, yeah, I'm just happy to be here.
You know, what I hear is that feeling of hurt when a business partner or employer, you know, whatever it is, breaks up with you, basically.
Yeah.
And even though it is business, it's still personal. I think there's a feeling of rejection.
For sure. Yeah, I'm sure that's underlying in there. And then I think there's just the obvious, anyone would go from the Pittsburgh facilities to the Chargers facilities and be like, whoa. Yeah. There is about 30 years worth of difference here in terms of upkeep and new technology and just the vast options you have as a player. Remember, he was at Alabama, so they have the works for their players. It was like a downgrade for him to go from Alabama to Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
I believe it was Zach Martin that told us a couple of years ago when we were joking on the FedEx Field locker room and stuff in Washington. That's always a disaster.
Yeah.
But he was like, actually, the Steelers locker room is the one that was just like old, decrepit, and smells awful, and they may only have like one stall, which is tough.
Yeah,
in a pregame situation where big men got to relieve themselves.
They share a facility with the Pitt Panthers, so they both
the Steelers.
Yeah, they're both in like what they're known as like the medical complex there at the University of Pittsburgh. So they're in the same. So you've
been all up in there.
I've been by that. I've never been into their facility, but I know they share a facility with the Pitt Panthers.
It's not a good look.
No, it's not. When you're sharing facilities with colleges, I don't know that the Steelers really pop up very well when it comes to some of the NFLPA report card stuff. about just the niceness of the facilities and everything. I think the Steelers are, but that's kind of who they are. That's their brand, blue collar town.
And I don't really know how much it matters. You know, I think if you want to take care of the players, I get it. If you're building a new facility, I get it. Let's make it with the latest and greatest. But I still think all players are going to choose what's the biggest offer. I guess it could be a tiebreaker. Like, wow, I'm going to live in Los Angeles. We have great facilities. But if another team's offering even $500,000 more, that's not an amount you can say no to.
Yeah, but then you're that team that always has to offer a little bit more for players because maybe you're having to make up for a lack of comfort or whatever. So there's a fine line there for sure. But you could tell Najee Harris is like, oh, this is what the other side of the NFL looks like here when you get with kind of a newer facility type organization. The other LSU Tiger that got paid was Texans All-Pro corner Derek Stingley Jr. 3 years, $90 million, $89 million guaranteed. Mm-hmm. Trying to see more of these almost or just about fully guaranteed contracts in the NFL.
Yeah.
I think Deshaun Watson, Kirk Cousins have kind of done some of that stuff. But you're starting to see that guaranteed money for some of these guys almost equal just the total allotment for the contract.
Yeah, you know, it's become a trend. I think Kirk Cousins was the first one who did it like 3-90 with the Vikings or something, if I remember correctly. And that wasn't too long ago, so it's become a trend. I think for a lot of teams like the Cowboys who are constantly flipping switches, there's no way they're going to get out early on a lot of these, so they don't mind it. It's like, sure, guarantee the whole thing. You know, you're a young man. We're not moving on. We're going to immediately start backloading a ton of it anyway. So you're going to be an uncuttable player for the life of your contract. And I guess you just got to have a handful of those that you know you're kind of married to.
Yeah, and this one's a short-term deal, only 3 years. So Stingley gets to really, he'll get to re-enter the market still well within his prime.
Got
to
stay healthy, though, man. That guy's had some issues.
No doubt. That was the big thing coming in, and he was able to stay healthy for the most part this past year. That was really the only question because, I mean, ever since I think the back end of his rookie year, Stingley's been everything you'd want him to be as long as he's healthy. So, and that secondary with the Texans, I remember when the Cowboys were getting ready to play the Texans, it was like, dang, they got like three or four young studs in that secondary. They're going to need to ball out this year with what they've done to their offensive line. Bobby pointed this out. The agent for Derek Stingley is David Mulugeta, same as Micah Parsons. This dude is tearing it up. $350 million in guarantees this offseason, and he still has the Micah deal to come down, hopefully sooner rather than later. But that particular agent right there is absolutely crushing. Okay, now elsewhere around the NFL, we've got the Patriots expected to be asking for a third round pick to trade their quarterback Joe Milton. Sources closer to the situation than me expect the asking price of the Patriots to be a third round pick. Writes Tony Grossi, who covers the Patriots. The Browns apparently interested in him. He's got an absolute cannon. And he made a couple of appearances this past season and looked solid enough for teams to now be interested in him. It's funny about the draft because right now, Broadus, so far there have been no trades involving first round picks.
No, I know.
This is the closest, according to Adam Schefter, this is the closest to the start of the NFL draft in which there have been no trades for first round picks since all the way back in 1993.
I think people are kind of not sure. A lot of it's they're building these boards, really kind of not sure where they're going to see all these guys. I think if you went to 32 teams, you're probably going to see 32 different boards. Sometimes you could kind of be on the same wavelength with other teams around the league. I'm feeling this one, especially with the first, say, 15 to 20 picks, might be a little bit some head-scratching going on.
Well, the last time it was this long or this close to draft day before there was a first-round pick traded, it was 1993, like I mentioned. Yeah. It was 5 days before that year's draft. Do you remember what that would have been?
Oh, it was my second draft.
It's an NFC team trading a quarterback to an AFC team.
Who was it?
Joe Montana.
Oh, wow.
Chiefs traded their first-round pick to the Niners that year. Mm. They got Joe. I don't know much about the Joe Montana, Kansas City era.
Got in the playoffs. Led him to the playoffs.
That first year was respectable?
Yeah.
But it was kind of 1 year?
Yep, absolutely.
Okay.
He was playing hurt. His elbow was all swollen up. Yep. I don't know, has elbow blown out or something? I just remember him, you know, trying to overcome injury to even play in the playoff games.
Yeah, right there, hanging on by a thread. It's weird to even see the photos of him in a Chiefs uniform. Not that I actually saw him live in a Niners uniform, but still, I know what I'm supposed to expect.
He's much better than a Niners uniform.
Yeah. Raiders' new quarterback, Geno Smith, and Shedeur Sanders have been hanging out together this offseason. So everybody, I mean, the Raiders are already a prime candidate to potentially take Shedeur Sanders at number 6 overall in the draft. We know about the connection with the TB12 stuff with Brady and Shedeur. So if Geno and Shedeur are hanging out right now, are they sending out tea leaves about the draft plans of the Raiders?
I wouldn't be surprised if that's the case. I mean, that would make sense. You as your buddy, classic, buddy. You know, yeah. veteran to rookie him, type yeah, bridge.
Under his wing.
I don't know. I don't know. Would Shedeur and want to go to a team where there was a veteran quarterback waiting? I don't know. That seems maybe more like maybe a mentorship.
Maybe more palatable if it's a guy that you like and respect. You know, if Shador's like, if him and Geno are boys that way. But, yeah, I don't know if we can actually read anything into that or not. Geno Smith also working out with Stephon Diggs. So Raiders fans are like, okay, maybe the Diggs thing is real. Diggs looks healthy. He's out there running around, running routes. Yeah. And he opened up his Instagram to now reveal the old Bills photos that he had sort of muted from his account. Those are now back and people can view them. So
didn't know you could do that.
Bills fans are also maybe thinking about the return of Stephon Diggs.
Yeah, there's a lot of groups of buddies and stuff, whether it's a little quarterback club or, you know, players you played in college with, had the same agency and groups that like to hang out a lot. And
yeah,
I think
it really...
there's different pockets of places you can go.
Yeah, it could be nothing, but yeah. Geno and Shedeur hanging out, maybe future teammates.
Yeah, they like to get in their little gyms and stuff. I know a guy in town. I know a place in town so we can go and work and not be bothered, have to, you know, work out with the common folk.
Never want to be doing
get hurt that.
That
way. Thank you, Chief.
Yes, sir.
It's time for the C-Note Cowboys news of the evening. Who do the Cowboys need to draft as their new backup quarterback with Cooper Rush going out to the Ravens? I'll give you some options. See which one you guys like the most. That's coming up next year. G-Bag Nation of the Fan. Here we go, Nation. Welcome back. Time for the C-Note Cowboys news of the evening brought to you by the Frankels. If you've been injured in a car, truck, wreck, call the Frankels first, 214 or 817-333-3333. With Franklin Frankel, there's never an out-of-pocket cost. They only get paid when you win. Franklin Frankel, go-to car and truck wreck attorneys in Dallas. We're talking Cowboys quarterback. I think it's fascinating in a lot of ways. But with Cooper Rush leaving for Baltimore, puts a higher premium on the idea of finding your next backup quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
So who the Cowboys need to draft? I found a guy, Brian.
And who you got?
Well, I do need to tell you, By finding a guy, I just mean that I read about him a little bit. I watched some highlight videos. So
Scout Gavin hadn't got on him yet?
Well, I mean, I did watch some highlight videos, and that's as most as Scout Gavin does.
All right.
But I wanted to get your thoughts on him. I know you haven't watched all the quarterbacks yet, but just a guy to put on the radar.
Sure.
Let me paint you a picture of Curtis Rourke at Indiana. He's coming off an ACL.
Yeah.
But a big guy, accurate arm, good decision making, had a lot of touchdowns, not many picks. He's just not an athlete or an improv guy, you know, so he's kind of stuck in the pocket. But man, watching him play, it just seems like we're in a pretty pro style offense and he can really throw it around the yard well. The stats match up. Obviously, the highlights are going to make him look good. So I can't wait for your critiques.
Yeah, no, I've done a lot of work with Big Ten football, and you know, Indiana was one of those teams that got into the playoffs, had a heck of a run with the Notre Dame, got beat. But yeah, when you watch opponents that play Indiana's offense, this kid, you're right. I mean, he's one of those guys that stand in there, make a tough throw. He was accurate throwing the football. I just there were times where I was like, you're watching these quarterbacks, it's like, oh, that was a good throw. You're not really studying him, but you're noticing the plays they're making. And he was one of those guys I kind of felt like that as I got to him might be like a third or fourth round guy.
Yeah.
That's what
he read like to me. Dude is not going to be there in the fifth round.
Yeah, no, this is not going to be, I don't think this is going to be one of these. This might be a day two guy.
Okay.
When you're looking at things, like a second or not, maybe not maybe so much a second round, but a third round guy. I would be kind of mindful of that.
And that's rich, I think, for a lot of people. It comes down to, okay, we got the situation where Dak's going to be 32 years old. He's coming off another significant injury. Last year didn't look good even before the injury. So do you want to put the best possible team around him, or would you want to take an opportunity with one of your first three picks to possibly find a guy that you could, you know, turn into the starter in the next 1 to 3 years. Mm-hmm. You know, I think there's some value there. At 12, it really starts to make me go, oh, geez, it better be a player we love. And in the second round, similar type of deal. You need a good wide receiver and running back, really. Mm-hmm. And I think you need another left tackle. They're not going to do that. But with a new wide receiver and running back, you could at least be more explosive. But in round three, Chief, I'm interested.
Yeah, I mean, I get it if there's a guy that you really love, but I do think it's kind of a luxury pick, and they're not at the portion of their team building where they have luxuries. They have still so many holes that need to be filled right now. You spent this money on the quarterback. You married this guy. Don't start hedging now. I would save the hedging for next year. Not
well,
to say you don't take a quarterback
with
at
the
all.
Injury? Then doesn't it change a little bit with the injury, the avulsion fracture? Could further slow him down.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean,
it's
awful early in the contract. It's just starting.
Right.
And you don't really have an out. But, I mean, if there's a player that you feel like this guy is going to be an NFL starter, I think at round three, I like it. In the first round, I'm with you. Like, hey, we need to find a badass player, because if he does stay healthy, then Dak Prescott can still have one of the best 5 quarterback seasons out there in the NFL. Chase Daniel on Twitter, reacting to an Ian Rappaport tweet about Stephen Jones saying they need a backup quarterback, he points to Jalen Milroe, Bama, Colin McCord, Syracuse. Our guys at Pro Football Network did a little bit of a write-up on it that I can work off of and ask you guys some questions. But it kind of comes down to, what do you want, upside, or do you want a floor? Because Milroe being a freakish athlete, to me, is exciting. If this guy is a day three pick, first round skill set with fifth round tape, yeah. Said one scouting report about him. Yeah. Glimpses of elite accuracy, gives him an extremely high ceiling. Breakaway speed and arm strength, lack of consistency, lack of accuracy. And then McCord, who's the decision maker without any tools. So which one of those would you prefer in the fifth round, Brian?
Give me the guy that's the athlete. You know, I not that I could teach him to be a better passer or anything like that, but his ability to make plays with his feet, I watched him just carve up my alma mater at LSU, and it was a read option stuff. It was very similar to watching, and this is going to sound really funny and strange, it was very similar to watching Dak play LSU when he was at Mississippi State and he ran for like 300 yards. Hmm. And the ball was going all over the place with the accuracy or lack of, but there was that ability to run and make plays. And this guy, you're probably going to have to work with him and hope that it works out, but you cannot teach that athletic ability that he has. It's rare. There's things you could do with him just as a ball carrier, running quarterback, put him as a back in the backfield, throw him the ball. I mean, there's a lot of things you take him to the game that you surely can try and make work.
I would think between what Schottenheimer did with Russell Wilson in Seattle, with what Clayton Adams did in Arizona, Connor Riley at Kansas State, like, you give me a blazing game-breaking quarterback, you know, just give me sufficient passing, I'd be excited about that. Like, what could this possibly turn into if you had a Milroe and a star young running back?
Man, I think he's one of those guys that probably still needs plenty of development.
There's, from a
passing standpoint, yeah, he's got a cannon arm. But the command of it with the accuracy and whatnot
is
stuff. He doesn't know where it's going to go.
He has no clue.
But he is a guy with, if you have a creative enough head coach, that you can get something out of him from the jump because of the athleticism factor. I mean, he really does. You catch him in the open field and you think this is one of those 5-star Alabama running backs that is going in the first round.
Yeah.
He's so big and so fast. Like, there has to be a secondary option for, hey, if we go 3 or 4 years developing him and he's not getting it, this is one of those dudes that could probably play another position.
Yeah, he is that special. You know, I don't know. It'd be interesting if you had a really good offensive line, a great running back, and him without being able to throw it. You're zigging when the rest of the league is zagging. Mm-hmm. You could win games like that.
You can win regular season games like that. Your ceiling is brought down because the health factor, being able to do that consistently, and once you get certain things on tape and now teams start forcing you out of your tendencies with a quarterback who doesn't know where the ball's going when he throws, it would be a lot to ask.
Okay, the other player mentioned here as like a day three kind of guy in a lot of these stories is Dylan Gabriel, the quarterback from Oregon. I don't know. I
very short.
At 5'11", Brian, I'm out.
Yeah.
You know, I think I finally joined you over there. I was intrigued by the Baker Mayfields and Kyler Murrays and some of the shorter guys. And I'm impressed with what both those guys have done, but I just don't, you'll never get elite. When I'm taking a quarterback, I want to have a chance to have the best player at that position in the history of the game. I don't think that can be a 5'11 guy.
If you could put together this player and the player we just previously talked about, you'd have the first overall pick.
Yeah.
Because the one thing that Dylan Gabriel is super accurate. And maybe there'll be some comparisons to his height with you see with like what Drew Brees was able to do because of how accurate. And that's what made Drew Brees such a great player is how accurate he was throwing the football. And so you'll get those types of comparisons. But, man, this guy, I mean, he is – when you watch him play, he has to move to throw the football. He can't just sit in the middle. Now, he'll drop back and let it fly on a quick throw to the outside or a hitch or something like that. But if he's going to have to work the ball down the field, he has to slide a little bit right or left to kind of find some space and lanes to be able to hit guys on the move.
I mean, it's just so difficult. You know, I guess if a guy like that gets to the NFL and he's having success somewhere and
he
I need
so
a quarterback,
I mean,
I would take him.
Yeah.
But I'm not betting on that being successful out of college.
Yeah. Well, he will throw a very pretty ball, you know, and you can watch him. He's been three different schools.
Okay.
And so you can kind of get an idea of like different receivers he's worked with. I know Tez Johnson at Oregon, who we're all watching, is, you know, extremely an explosive player, getting the ball to these guys on the move, you know, and not having these guys break stride. He's just short. That's the biggest issue with him is, but everything else is pretty solid.
Okay, you got Paris Campbell coming aboard, second rounder for the Colts in 2019, another bustola for the Cowboys. They, you know, had a situation at Ohio State where, from what I can gather, very elementary role that he was able to exploit for big-time plays, but it was a very limited role and a undeveloped route tree, and even inside that, his routes were bad. And that's why, even though he had such a great final season at Ohio State, he was still just a second rounder with an amazing combine. But I guess the hope here, Brian, is that maybe the injuries prevented his development, and if he can stay healthy here and you could scheme him open into space, he could help your offense somehow?
Yeah, this is just a guy that's going to compete.
Yeah,
it's a veteran guy that's going to – maybe you'll get something out of this. I think all these moves that they've made is not keeping me at all from drafting somebody in this thing. So I think this was more about a competitive situation than it was a guy that's going to come here and beat Tolbert or one of those guys out for a position.
All right. So we'll hope for the best there, but I still think Cowboys need to do something unexpected or we'll be drafting a wide receiver in the first two rounds.
I think they could absolutely be drafting a wide receiver.
Are we done in free agency, you think, at this point? What are you hearing? What's the buzz?
I have not heard much about it because I did ask the question of what was the question I asked about? Oh, geez. The Trey Lance, and that's the last thing I've asked about. And I go, hey, is the Trey Lance ship sailed? And I got, don't know. So,
well, if there's not a market for him, I mean, the signings are going to be around $1 million or $2 million at this point. I think bringing him back as your backup and then taking a quarterback day three probably makes the most sense at this point. And you hope, you know, Dak comes back and your left tackle plays a lot better next year and you can enjoy, you know, the final half decade of Dak's career with what I would expect at that point to be solid offense if you can get those things to fall in place. Blogging the Boys, Sean Martin has a story. Cowboys would be wise to follow the subtle advice from Zach Martin about young linemen and balancing the offense. Martin, I came into a perfect situation. The running game was a big part of what we did. It really allowed me to develop a lot of young linemen, get thrown into the fire, throwing the ball 50 times a game. We were running it 30 to 40 times a game. It allowed to develop some of those things I wasn't great at when I first got here. Yeah, I think that's huge. Terrence Steele, better in the run game. You'll be better at right tackle. Your guards are going to produce better in the run game than they have in the pass game. And beyond that, you got to run these defenses into more favorable looks for Prescott. That's been the problem for a number of years. And when this offensive line started to age and deteriorate, I've been banging that drum for a long time. You're just not going to get great efficient play against quality defense, I think, with this quarterback. I don't know why it's taken so long. I still don't think they're fully acknowledging it, Chief.
No, it's taken. I mean, they're always late to the party on a lot of this stuff. So it's no surprise. But hopefully, with at least the coaching staff, they've now built a staff out that definitely has that vision.
You're right. This coaching staff is exciting. You know, the roster might not be there this year. It might take a while. You know, this kind of reminds me of 2011 through 2013, where their team building was just to try to give them a shot at making the playoffs, play relevant football games. But it took them from 2010, when they drafted Dez, until 2014, when they got Zach Martin, to totally transition, right? It took them 4 or 5 years, and Jason Garrett was in charge. At least at this point, I think by the time you get there, you might have a coaching staff that complements it quite well and is actively giving you an advantage on game day, maybe for the first time in 20 years around these parts, yeah. Brian.
Far too long.
Krusty's Corner's coming up next. Where are you taking us?
I got some thoughts on St. Patrick's Day, which we're celebrating today. So come back for that, and we'll have some fun.
Thank you very much, Lucius. It's the G-Bag Nation here on The Fan. The 570 says, Tolo from Pennsylvania, talk about the Cowboys draft. Well, you are definitely in the right place here on your home of the Cowboys. We have the best draft coverage in the nation. And my guy right here, Brian Broaddus, former Cowboys scout, NFL executive, Super Bowl champ, leads up our coverage, does a hell of a job. And many days, he's going to have draft coverage right here for you in Krusty's Corner, brought to you by Reliant Air Conditioning, gimmick-free AC repair and replacement. Here's the king, Ross.
Thank you very much, Sean. Appreciate that, and thank you very much to Reliant. We've got all kinds of things going on with our draft coverage. I know we have tomorrow we have the draft show on, which would be on DallasCowboys.com, which is, if you haven't already got on that one, feel free to do
it's
so.
A
that,
must.
That's on their platforms. That is an hour. Twice a week of draft coverage. I know then Botch Lombardi and I do a YouTube podcast together that talks draft every single night. Matter of fact, we're into fourth and fifth round players. Yeah, we do it 5 days a week. So a lot of draft coverage there for you. So if not here, there's other opportunities as well. Today is St. Patrick's Day, Dust. I wore my green shirt.
Very nice touch there.
Represent on my Masters.
With the Masters hoodie.
Looks good. Today. Where are you guys on St. Patrick's Day? Was that ever a holiday?
It.
I mean, to me, that was when in college, that was a go out and sit outside on the patio at a place with sunglasses on and kind of consume all day and into the night. Were we
absolutely
doing that stuff?
Yeah. Yes. I loved it. I think it's a big party night or party week. As we got older, we would just kind of hang out at the house and do like a barbecue, put some baked potatoes on there, throw some brisket or whatever in there, a bunch of Guinness. But one way or another, it'd be a party day.
Yeah, always synonymous with just being outside, good weather.
Little Fry Street and, thing, huh?
Yeah, Fry Street. Fry Street would sometimes have like their crawfish boils just all up and down the street during St. Patty. So you're just out there bar hopping, hanging out. And again, the weather's just incredible. In college, it was one of my favorite holidays.
Yeah, that and New Year's Eve used to be like my two favorite holidays. But, man, it's hard when St. Patrick's Day falls on a Monday, right?
No, you got to get those celebrations.
So you
got to
go for the Saturday parade, right?
Yeah, go for
the
absolutely.
The Saturday parade.
And that's the real St. Patty's Day in my mind. You know,
that is when the parade
happens.
It's
just whenever the parade happens, that Saturday is St. Patty's Day.
All right, well, I'm just going to do something a little different here. There's some, like, Irish traditions, sayings, superstitions, all kinds of things that, you know, or in honor of St. Patrick's Day. And then I'm also going to go through, because of St. Patrick's Day, some of the luckiest sporting events ever. Ooh. Luck.
Shiver me timbers.
Luck that just won a sporting event. And this is all has to do with St. Patrick's Day and Irish and being lucky and all those things. Just to start off with the Irish folklore, I suppose how you say it. An itchy nose. Your nose itches?
Too much hydrocodone.
Yep. Well, no.
About to get some money.
No, Lucius.
Damn. It's not like the hand, huh? If your hand itches, you're
about
to get something.
Yeah, if your palm itches, you're going to get some money in that hand.
Just means you're about to sneeze, right?
No, it signifies you're about to get into a fight. A fight might be in your near future.
With an itchy nose?
If your nose starts itching, according to the Irish,
yeah, I bet.
A fight might be in your future.
McGregor's always scratching.
Giving somebody a watch. To the Irish. You know what that has to signify? If you give
somebody being so late all the time.
If you give
Bingo.
Lucy, she have an idea. Giving somebody a watch if you're Irish.
Oh, shoot, man. That means you need to watch it, pal. I'm going to punch you in the face.
Yeah, it all goes back to
fighting.
Because
your itchy nose. to the Irish, if you get a watch as a gift from your significant other, it supposedly means that you're going to break up because your time is running out.
Ooh, wow. Oh. That's quite a message you're sending there with the gift.
Like buying your girl some shoes. Yeah. She's going to walk out of your life.
Yeah, just take a walk. Wow. Yeah. Like, here's some shoes for walking.
This is the last gift I'm going to give you, lad.
Oh, it's a beautiful watch.
This has to be a bottom of the barrel watch then that you're giving. You're not going high dollar watch as like a gift.
It might be worth it just to move on.
It's a brushback pitch.
You might just, but yeah, you give somebody a watch or you get a watch, it means that you're likely to break up because time's running out.
You're on borrowed time.
You guys ever had a bird poop on you?
Yes, as a matter of fact. My car gets it all the time, but in college,
that's a good thing.
I worked for an apartment complex, and I was walking on this sidewalk that was just engulfed in trees, and out of nowhere, like a crowd of birds just like
took
skedaddle
off.
Mm-hmm. And then boom, right there, like on my ear, I had bird poo on my ear.
You know, I got last summer and a half ago out there in Oxnard at our spot there behind the bar.
One of those seagulls got you, huh?
Oh, rudder room got you. Yeah, and it's amazing how quickly it just reeked like poop. Yeah. You know, you'd think it's such a tiny amount, but you know, it hit.
Oh, there was a real odor involved.
I didn't get it as bad as Woolchuck, but we all smelled it. It was like you were standing in an outhouse there for a few moments till we could get it cleaned up.
I do remember. I thought we were walking back from practice, and that the corridor by the stands on the way to the
might have been
lot,
a separate event.
I thought that Woolchuck got pooped on there too.
Have you guys ever had that nightmare where it's like raining? It's like raining poo.
No.
What?
Oh my gosh, that's one of the worst. That's one of the worst. I think it's like a lot of people have gotten this particular nightmare.
Raining poo,
where you're literally you're in like what Dawson's describing, his nightmare of being pooed on by a seagull. Mm-hmm. But imagine that was just the sky was just unloading seagull poo all over you. Wow. And you wake up in a panic, in a sweat, and you're like, let me go back to sleep. That was awesome.
Near death.
Well, according to Irish superstition, a bird pooping on you or your car is actually considered good luck.
Okay.
And is a sign of positive things to come.
All right. Can't get worse than that.
Yeah.
There's a car in my condos, hasn't moved in a few months. I'll tell you what, it's full of luck.
No, it's full
of luck all over it.
Good luck getting that cleaned. I can't stand when a bird poops my car.
Are you how anal are you guys about washing your cars?
I did it yesterday and I had to, we're doing a workout back of the condo. So we had to move our cars to the front.
You're doing a workout?
No, work.
You're doing construction.
Construction work.
Out back,
and my car completely looks like I washed it yesterday, and it looks like just dust and leaves and it just completely pollen, all kinds.
I just want to point out just the surprise in Dawson's voice when he thought you might have been working out in the backyard.
Yeah, it sounded like he was getting a cross train set up going there in the back patio or something.
No,
I was impressed.
No.
Like,
no.
Wow.
It's walking only, right?
Walking only.
I'm horrible at it, and I do need to go get my truck washed. But I've had that truck for 2 years. I don't think I've ever washed it.
Oh, my God.
But with that sandstorm from last week, I got to now.
I cannot stand my car looking bad. I just can't.
Yeah, I was in line for 35 minutes.
I did.
On Saturday.
I did the same thing.
I heard Saturday
I did yesterday.
Whole line
35
of red dusty cars.
Yeah.
You needed a flash pass.
It was lined up out onto the road a couple hundred feet. When we drove by, I didn't stop there. I still need to get my truck washed. But we were trying to pull into the Target there in Town East. It was way backed up.
Here's some of the luckiest sporting plays ever. So it's kind of a St. Patrick's Day theme here.
Okay.
Lucky sports plays of all time. This one comes to us from the 1970 NBA Finals. This is the Knicks and the Lakers playing. This is Jerry West. Trailing 102-99 in Game 3, Jerry West made a remarkable 60-foot half-court shot to send the game into overtime.
Three-pointer.
The Lakers went on to lose 111-108, but West's last-second shot had remained an all-time classic, just another reason why he's the logo. Hmm. How about this one? Babe Ruth calls his shot. We remember that, right?
Was that a St. Patty's Day special?
Yeah, was that a whiskey
That's
shot?
Just a luck. That's
shot of bourbon? Coming.
Luck. Okay. This is luck. All sports luck. We may never know if Babe Ruth was pointing to the outfield or simply gesturing towards Chicago Cubs pitcher Charlie Root before his iconic home run. Nevertheless, the moment defined Ruth's legendary career and will continue to live in sports infamy. Babe Ruth, lucky.
That's probably one of the coolest things you can do. Like, you hear in the NBA all the time, people call their shot, like, hey, I'm going to go here and I'm going to pull up on you and that's going to happen, and boom, it happens, like Larry Bird. But calling your own dong like that,
yeah,
that is unbelievable.
It's luck.
I mean, there's certainly some luck involved, but it's Babe Ruth, dude.
Yeah. Say another lucky, all-time lucky play. David Tyree's helmet catch.
Absolutely.
Lucky?
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah, he was a terrible player.
Yeah. David Tyree became the Giants legend thanks to an unforgettable helmet catch in the final 2 minutes of the Super Bowl. Tyree's heroics, which proved to be the final reception of his NFL career, propelled the Giants.
That was his final catch?
The final catch he ever made.
Wow. After all these years, I don't think I knew that particular nugget, that was his final catch.
Final catch.
Went out on top.
Yep. It's spoiling the New England Patriots shot at perfection.
If he'd hit him in the numbers, he'd have probably dropped it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and if like a Justin Jefferson does that, you're like, yeah, I get that. I think there was some skill there. Tyree does it. That was pure luck.
Here's one that's close to home. The Dallas Stars win the Stanley Cup in controversial fashion.
Still won.
They call it a lucky goal. Brett Hull's 1999 Cup-winning goal in Game 6 remains one of the most controversial in NHL history. Replay clearly showed Hull's skate was in the crease, but the goal stood as the NHL rules deemed the Hall of Famer to be in possession of the puck.
That's right.
Dallas Star fans erupted in jubilation, and the Buffalo Sabres faithful went left wondering what might have been.
Yeah, yeah, massive fortune of luck.
That was a very
great team, though. Don't want to take anything away.
I've never been so tired watching a sporting event in my life when that one was over. I didn't have the energy to
huffing and puffing like Luka in the first quarter.
I was so glad it was over, and I'm so glad my team won.
I think that's what's great about hockey and soccer is just it takes your breath away for a sustained period of time, because just the next goal can determine everything.
All. Here's luck. Spurs win the 1997 draft lottery. Before the 1996-97 campaign, the San Antonio Spurs made the playoffs 8 straight years. That streak came to an end due to an injury to star center David Robinson. San Antonio finished the league's 3rd worst record. However, Robinson's injury proved to be a blessing in disguise as the Spurs won the 1997 draft lottery, a.k.a. the Tim Duncan sweepstakes. Robinson and Duncan would go on to form the formidable Twin Towers, and it worked out pretty well for them, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, they won the championship in 99 and 4 more after that. Quite a dynasty they had there.
And the final bit of luck in sports.
But maybe not as lucky as also getting Ginobili and Parker as late as they did.
Yeah.
You know, that was just a horseshoe
situation. They had
a lot
of luck.
Yeah.
Dawson, you'll remember this one.
Don't do it.
I think you will. Maradona's hand of God. You remember this one?
I do.
In the World Cup?
Mm-hmm.
Beat
England with it?
Yeah. He beat this was when Diego Maradona was responsible for a famous hand of God goal with the little head of Maradona and a little hand of God.
Yes.
That's what that's how he described it.
We were kids when that happened, Chief.
1986.
Maradona went up for a goal and put his hand right next to his head, and as the ball flew past him, he punched it just barely.
Yeah.
Oh, sneaky.
There was no VAR, obviously, at the time.
None.
Ref didn't see it.
Argentina won the match 2-1 en route to capturing the country's second World Cup. So those were some lucky plays on St. Patrick's Day.
Thank you, Broadus.
Thank you.
And thank you to everybody who's out there celebrating St. Patrick's Day with us. Join us Friday. Cold beers and cheeseburgers will be there for a tournament watch party. It's off 121 there in Euless. They'll have $3 pints of Ultra and $4 Jameson shots. It's going to be great. 2 hours down, 3 to go. ESPN senior NHL writer Greg Wyshynski on how much of a favorite the Stars are to win the Cup. That's coming up next here, G-Bag Nation and the Fan.